Random House Audio presents Ruby, written and read for you by Cynthia Bond. Book 1, Wishbone. Chapter 1. Ruby Bell was a constant reminder of what could befall a woman whose shoe heels were too high. The people of Liberty Township wove her into cautionary tales of the wages of sin and travel. They called her buck crazy, howling half-naked mad. The fact that she had come back from New York City made this somewhat understandable to the town. She wore gray like rain clouds and wandered the red roads in bared feet, calluses thick as boot leather, hair caked with mud, blackened nails as if she had scratched the slate of night, her acres of legs carrying her, arms swaying like a loose screen, her eyes the ink of sky just before the storm. That is how Ruby walked when she lived in the splintered house that Papa Bell had built before he passed. When she dug into the East Texas soil under moonlight, and wailed like a distant train. In those years, after her return, people let Ruby be. They walked a curved path to avoid her door. And so it was more than strange when someone walked the length of Liberty and brought a covered cake to the Bell's front porch. Ephraim Jennings had seen the gray woman passing like a haint through the center of town since she'd returned to Bell Land in 1963. All of Liberty had. He had seen her wipe the spittle from her jerking lips, run her still beautiful hands over the crust of her hair each day before she'd turn the corner in view of the town. He'd seen her walking like she had some place she ought to have been, then 5 steps away from P&K Market, stand pillar still, her rain cloud body shaking. Ephraim had seen Miss P, the proprietor of the store, walk nonchalantly out of her door and say, "Honey, can you see if I got the rise in these rolls right?" Ephraim watched Ruby stare past her, but take the brown sack filled with steaming yeast bread, take it and walk away with her acres of legs carrying her, while Miss P said, "You come on back tomorrow, Ruby Bell, and help me out if you get the chance." Ephraim Jennings had watched this for 11 years, seen her black-bottomed foot kick a swirl of dust in its wake. Every day he wanted nothing more than to put each tired soul in his wide wooden tub, brush them both in warm, soapy water, cream them with sweet oil and lanolin, and then slip her feet, one by one, into a pair of red heel socks. But instead, with each passing year, he watched Miss P do her Christian duty from the corner of his eye, watched the gray woman stoop to accept the doughy alms. He sat alongside the crowd of men parked on their stools outside P&K, who read their papers, played dominoes and chewed tobacco, toothpicks dangling, pipes smoking, soda pops sweating, just as they had the day Ruby arrived back in Liberty. When she'd stepped from the red bus, the porch had crowded her with their eyes, hair pressed and gleaming like polished black walnut, lipstick red and thick, her cornflower blue sundress darted and stitched tight to her waist. Ephraim had watched her light a cigarette and glare down at the crowd on the market porch in such a way that made folks feel embarrassed for breathing. Chauncey Rankin had said later, "Not only do her shit not stink, way she acts, she ready to sell it by the ounce." They had all watched steadily as she slipped into madness. Concern, mingled with a secret satisfaction, melted into the creases of their bodies like Vaseline. After a time, they barely glanced up from their papers when Ruby walked up to the market. They yawned her existence away or spit out a wad of tobacco juice to mark her arrival. A low joke might rumble as Miss P handed over her bread, followed by throaty chuckles. But one end of summer day, Ephraim Jennings took particular notice. One by one, the men on the porch did as well. For instead of walking away with her bread as she normally did, Ruby didn't move, her body rooted to the spot. She stood there, holding the brown sack, hand quivering like a divining rod. And then she peed, a long, steady stream that hit the red dust and turned it the color of brick. She did it absently, with calm disinterest. Then, because no one knew quite what to do, Gubber Samuels pointed and hurled out a rough bark of laughter. Ruby looked down and saw the puddle beneath her. Surprise flowered on her face, then fell away, leaving a spreading red shame. Her hands leapt to her eyes, but when she brought them down, the world was still there. So she dropped the sack in the pool of urine and ran. But it wasn't running. It was flying, long and graceful, into the piney woods, like a deer after the crack of buckshot. Ephraim almost stood, almost ran down the porch steps and into the woods after her. But the eyes of men were too strong, and the continued spitting and snickering of Gubber Samuels anchored him against the tug of mercy. Because Ephraim's mama had long since gone to glory, that very day he asked his older sister Celia to make up her white lay angel cake because he needed to carry it to an ailing friend. Celia looked at him out of the corner of her eye, but made it anyway. She made it in that pocket of time before dawn, when the aging night gathered its dark skirts and paused in the stillness. She made it with 12 new eggs, still warm and flecked with feathers. She washed them and cracked them, one at a time, holding each golden yolk in her palm as the white slid and dropped through her open fingers. She set them aside in her flower china bowl. In the year 1974, Celia Jennings still cooked in a wood-burning stove. She still used a whisk and muscle and patience to beat her egg whites into foaming peaks. She used pure vanilla, the same sweet liquid she had poured into Saturday night baths before their father, the Reverend Jennings, arrived back in town. The butter was from her churn, the confectioner's sugar from P&K. And as she stirred the dawn into being, a dewdrop of sweat salted the batter. The cake baked and rose with the sun. Ephraim slept as the cake slid from its tin, so sweet it crusted at its crumbling edges, so light little craters of air circled its surface, so moist it was sure, as was always the case, to cling to the spaces between his sister's long three-pronged silver fork. Celia Jennings never cut her white lay angel cake with a knife. "It'd be like using an axe to skin a rabbit," she'd always say. The cake was cooling when Ephraim awoke. It settled into itself as he bathed and dressed for the day. Ephraim Jennings smoothed the corners of his great-granddaddy's hat for the 10th time that morning, his wide square thumbs running along the soft hide brim. The leather so thin in places, the sun filtered through softly like a Chinese lantern. The magical thing about Ephraim Jennings was that if you looked real hard, you could see a circle of violet rimming the brown of his irises, soft like the petals of spreading periwinkle. The problem was that no one, not even his sister, took the time to really look at Ephraim Jennings. Folks pretty much glanced past him on the way to Bloom's Place, or P&K. To them, he was just another thick, horse-brown man with a ratted cap and a stooped gait.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?